Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Care to Read Room. You got your Omi Inca 7 live coming to you straight from my studio. I'd like to welcome each and every one of you and say hello to my old friends and say Habari Gani to my new friends. Once again, we have reached a peak in this room where we have been covering everything from wellness to education. And as you know, we've been talking about startup businesses, and we interrupt these airways to bring you a very, very important feature, and that is on the housing market and on the foreclosures of the urban city homes, and to talk about how we can defend ourselves and what mechanisms we can take in order to offset those foreclosures in the courtroom and what we can do to develop our own support group. So we have interrupted these airways to bring you a special broadcast, and we've brought in an expert to talk to us about how to form support groups and how to get on board with those existing groups and defend ourselves and take back our community and our homes. We brought to you, ladies and gentlemen, a young lady all the way from California, the sunny city. Yes, we brought to you a specialist that I'm sure you'll be very pleased with her credentials and her experience and the things that she's done in the profession of advocacy as well as working as a teacher. Now, I'd like to read to you a few of the things about Mrs. Tanya D. Dennis and give you just some background information, and we'll bring her on and say hello. Her name is Tanya D. Dennis. She's a graduate from UCLA in 1972 with a BA in education and an English minor and secondary teaching credential in 1973. She graduated from Peabody Vanderbilt University with an MA in physical education and dance and education. She was the head of the dance department at Virginia Commonwealth University from 1973 through 1976. She created the 26-member dance company, Izbu Montu, that is still in existence to this day, ladies and gentlemen. And in 1990 and in 1976, she moved back to Los Angeles and opened up a fitness center near Beverly Hills. And in 1982, she won the Jefferson Award, a national humanitarian award for her services to a young woman that was rendered quadriplegic after a near-fatal accident. And she wrote a book, Edge of Dream, regarding this. She was so moved by this that she wrote this particular book. Let me go on to see here. This book she wrote, Tanya moved back to Bay Area by 1984 to help her mother and care for her father and taught school and became the property manager for her parents' property. Mrs. Dennis returned to school and acquired an administrative credential from Cal State Hayward in 1991. She became the Dean of Students at Bret Hart Junior High School and Castleman High School, where she eventually became the vice president. And in 1995, Mrs. Dennis received the NAACP Community Service Award for her work at Castleman High School. The Civil Rights Commission asked Mrs. Dennis to give a report as to why her school had such low suspension rate of African-American males during her tenure, while other high school suspension rates were accelerating. And in 1996, Mrs. Dennis left the school district after successfully running a multi-level marketing business, Awesome Herbs, distributorship of the Sharpies concept. The name For Life Research, a company that sold body, wellness, and weight loss products. For 5 years, Mrs. Dennis made six figures annually with this business. Tanya Dennis has been an educational administrator and teacher in Oakland and Berkeley Unified School District for 35 years and a reporter for the Post newspaper group for 5 years, and is now a freelance writer. She wrote a book, African American Jewish History and Relationships, as a result of an incident that involved minority students and the movie Schindler's List. That generated international attraction when the students were expelled from the theater for being insensitive. She is a leader of her Home Defenders League for All Alliances of California for Community Empowerment. She has written two series of foreclosure gates and bankruptures as a result of her involvement in the movement, and magazine article entitled Movement for My Heart. Mrs. Dennis won the 2011 Miller's Coordinator Award for Excellence in Journalism. Ladies and gentlemen, why don't you join me in welcoming Mrs. Dennis to our humble stage as we welcome a champion to our room, ladies and gentlemen, a champion on the causes for educators and children, on the causes for rendering us able to fight back for our homes and our property. I look at this lady as a mentor, and I'm so glad that she was frequent to come into our room today. So why don't you join me in giving her a welcome this evening as we bring her into our setting. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank you so much. Tanya, we welcome you to the Care to Read Room, and thank you so very much for joining us today. And as we bring
thank you
into
for asking
the
me.
Study, we'd like to let you know that you are our hero in more ways than one, and we thank you so much for taking time out to be in our show today. And I've said so much about you, but I'd like to open up the airways to see if we can get up front and personal with you. And if there's something you would like to render or tell us that I didn't already include, please go ahead and do so.
Yes, thank you, Sherelle, for having me on your show. That was a very long bio. When you asked me to send it, I didn't know you were going to read all of it, because probably the last quarter is really what's pertinent to me in my life. I've become a champion for people that are facing foreclosure. I'm a champion against fighting the big banks and how they've crashed our economy, and I'm a champion to trying to bring our justice system to do the right thing, and that is to prosecute bankers for crashing the economy. I think when you met me, I was on my way to Washington, D.C. I belong to the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment. I'm the administrator of the Home Defenders League, And we've successfully kept about 70 people in their homes this year alone through what we call direct action. And what direct action is we directly confront the banks and demand certain things. It's very pertinent as to the particular situation that the homeowner is in at the moment. But most of them are facing foreclosure. And as you know, over 10 million people have been foreclosed on since this meltdown, mortgage meltdown in 2007. And it was directly the fault of the banks. One of the unfortunate things, Sherelle, is that the banks have control over the media as they do over our government. And they are so quickly to put out there that the homeowners are deadbeats, that the homeowners did something wrong. They bid off more than they could chew. They bought a house that they couldn't afford, and that is so untrue. Especially homeowners of my age, you know, I'm a retired teacher now. I'm back doing a little work in the classroom. But, you know, you save your money, you pay your down payment, and you think that everything is okay. And that was the banker's, honor. In the 1950s, the 1960s, they would give you a 30-year fixed. They would, hold your note in their vault, and then at the end of those 30 years, they'd hand you your deed of trust, shake your hand, and you'd be the proud owner of your property. Well, that was the American dream. Unfortunately, when President Clinton became president, I don't know why he did this, but he lifted the Glass-Steagall Act. It was a Republican Congress, and together they got rid of the Glass-Steagall Act, which was a regulating act on the banks. Now, you think we would have learned from the savings and loan debacle, where they, gave all of these faulty loans and, people went to jail, and, that's the key. They did some illegal activity, and 1,700 loan and savings officers went to jail. Well, I'm sure that every one of your listeners knows that even though the economy melted down in 2007 and we are now aware of the massive fraud, the pick-a-pay loans, the securitization of our loans into stocks, the derivatives, the credit card interest fees that are exorbitant over the top, the fact that the majority of our banks, like Wells Fargo and Chase, have laundered money for Libya and other foreign countries, that not one banker has gone to jail. So I'm getting back to when my group went to Washington, D.C. We went there. There were 500 of us, and we went to the steps of the Department of Justice. We had a letter for Eric Holder, and our question to Eric Holder was, why did he go before the judicial committee in Washington, D.C. in March and state that they would not prosecute the banks because they were too big to jail? I know Obama bailed out the banks to the tune of $3 trillion, saying they were too big to fail, and now they were too big to jail. We were incensed at this because the banks have been foreclosing on people with robo-signed documents, which is fraud. They've foreclosed on people who weren't even defaulting on their mortgage. It's just like a runaway train. They can do whatever they want because there's no sanctions. Yes, we've had a multi-state agreement with the attorney generals. Yes, we've had various settlements, but they are such a light slap on the wrist. It's almost like the cost of doing business for these banks. I'll give you an example. My mother's house was worth $1.2 million. In the meltdown, it went down to $650,000, and they wanted to give us $800 for my mother's $1,200,000 house. Now, when I complained to the Attorney General of California, Kamala Harris's office, the California Monitor, her response was, well, we can't interfere because we've reached a settlement with Wells Fargo. So basically, when I went to D.C., I had a sign, and it was on the front of the Washington Post, Wells Fargo stole my home. Wells Fargo basically took my mother's $1.2 million home and for $800 was able to sell it to another person, to an investor. So, you know, you read my bio, but I'm a home defender now. I am seeking justice against this injustice. It's unbelievable. It's obscene. And what the banks are doing is they're decimating the middle class.
Now, that, too, I wanted to discuss. But I want to discuss primarily the role that African Americans play in this conspiracy. Were we the targeted victims who were targeted for predatory lending practices and unlawful and misconduct, knowingly that if they gave us these high interest loans that we would not be able to substantiate them in the years to come and that we would be underwater? Were we purposely sought after as black women and minorities?
Yes. In particular, black women. I'll give you a few statistics that are chilling. In California, African Americans constitute 6% of the population, yet we received 55.3% of the predatory loans. The NAACP report, Discrimination in Mortgage Lending, you can access that on the internet. It's the NAACP report, Discrimination in Mortgage Lending, that an African American woman stands a 278% better chance of getting a toxic predatory loan than a white male. And it's across the board, Sherelle. You know, the whole thing is that we've always gotten a raw deal. I mean, in real estate before all of this occurred, our properties were redlined. We couldn't get loans because we lived in a certain neighborhood. So when the banks got deregulated and they could do whatever they wanted to do, they packaged these exotic loans, negative AM loans, and they especially targeted African-American and Latino neighborhoods. And banks have a fiduciary responsibility. That means they have superior knowledge. So it is their responsibility to fully disclose the terms of these loans, which they don't. I know every listener out there who's ever signed for a loan, they remember they get a phone book, thick, you know, book of papers, and they have 3 days to read through them, which people rarely do. And then if they do read it, you know, how much do you truly, truly understand? But even if you understood what you read and you signed it, what the banks did next was criminal. And what they did was they securitized our signature. And most people don't really understand securitization, so I'm going to put it in a really simple term. Most people don't understand that when they sign that note, their house is paid for. Your signature is monetized. So when I bought my house and, you know, it was like $482,000, when I signed on that dotted line, 6 months later, at that time it was World Savings, took my loan and securitized it for $482,000. My signature was worth $482,000 on the stock market. So first of all,
are you saying they borrowed against your signature as if it was collateral?
No, it's just like money. Just like we put intrinsic value in our paper dollar. Our paper dollar is just paper. But we have this belief that it's worth a dollar. You can buy a dollar's worth of candy or a dollar worth of this and a dollar worth of that. They securitized it and made them bonds. And the value of my signature was $482,000 because I'm paying on this note. And so the people that buy these bonds, they're secured bonds on my signature. Now, when I default, those, you know, they're no longer any good. And that's why the stock market took such a hit when people started defaulting on what they call mortgage-backed securities, because they then became worthless because people started defaulting and not paying on them. But you know who still came out a winner are the banks. The banks are slick. They bet on both sides. So they did not lose. They got paid by the stock market. And then when we defaulted, they got paid by the FDIC, the Federal Insured Deposit Corporation. Then they get paid by the REO that acquires the property. And then they get paid by the new owner of the property. So when people say, golly, you know, I'm going to the bank and I'm asking for a modification and they're not listening to me and they're kicking me to the curb, why aren't they giving me a loan on a house that I've owned for 10 years and now they're saying that I don't qualify? It's because for them to modify, they don't make money. When they foreclose,
and
they get paid
on
four
that note,
times.
Let's talk a little bit about modifications. I want the listening audience to know that there are different types of modification, and I've had people come to me and say, I have a government modification that guarantees that when I, you know, go through my modification, that I will actually have my interest deferred or my back payment paid off. And the same thing that goes with the short sales. There was a play on the short sales when they told people you had a short sale, and usually there was a government short sale that would guarantee any amount of excess money that was not paid off, or if you did not make enough to cover that house when you sold it, the excess amount would not go on your credit as negative credit, but it would in essence allow you to be forgiven of that excess amount that was not that your house wasn't sold for, and then in essence you could walk away free and clear with a small amount of money for relocation fees under that, under the government loans. But people were not looking into this. They thought they were on a government program, a HAFA program, and they found out there was no way they could have been on a government HAFA program because they only allowed certain types of loan, like the Freddie Mac and the Freddie Mae, were the only ones who were eligible for these loans, and people were going through the full process not realizing that they were not under a government HAFA program at all, and they were being disillusioned. And while one department was acting as if they were functioning under a short sale or under a modification, the other department was busy putting together a foreclosure package. What was that?
That's called dual track. Well, you said a mouthful, and you covered about five things, so I'm going to break it down, and I'm going to work backwards. What you just described last was dual tracking, and in California, we just recently, as of January 1st, passed the Homeowners Bill of Rights. And what dual tracking is that one arm of the bank is working, quote-unquote, on a modification with you while the other arm is foreclosing on you. You think that you're all good, you're safe, you're working with the bank, you're doing your due diligence, you're sending in your paperwork, and meanwhile the other arm is foreclosing. And the next thing you know, you open up your front door and there's a sheriff's notice posted that your house has been sold. That's been made illegal in California, and hopefully, you know, it'll happen in other states. As far as the short sale, that's just another way to steal your house. They give you cash for keys. They give you $5,000 to walk away, and they've got your $500,000 house. And the short sale just makes their paperwork less in that they don't have to go through all the paperwork and rigmarole of a foreclosure. So that's a joke. Like I said, the banks are rigged to win. I don't care how you play the game. And I don't know, for those Freddie Mae and Fannie Mac, Freddie and Fannie that were, you know, had these federally insured loans, our organization, which I belong to, and other organizations, we had pressure on Obama this past year to get rid of the head of Freddie and Fannie. His name was DeMarco. And he refused to give principal reduction because he said it would make the deadbeat homeowners deliberately default on their loans to get a modification. Well, we successfully got rid of him, and he's been replaced by a more homeowner-friendly representative. His name is Mr. Watts. And hopefully people that have federally insured loans will now be able to get principal reductions, because this is the key. The banks inflated the cost of our homes. And I'll use my house as a prime example. Keep it simple. My house, I got it for $482. At the prime peak, it was worth $650. When the market crashed in 2007, all of a sudden my $650,000 home was worth $350,000. But yet here I am holding a loan for $382. That's what you call an underwater home. You owe more than what the house is worth. So that kind of explains why people started walking away from their homes in droves. If they were smart, it was not a smart move to continue to pay on a $650,000 note and the house is only worth $360,000. That's throwing good money after bad. Now, if the banks, you know, they're saying, oh, you know, the economy's crashed, what are we going to do? If the banks were honorable, which we know they aren't, since they inflated that cost and now they deflated the cost, I mean, they're controlling us like puppets. If they brought down everybody's homes. I'm not even just talking about those in foreclosure, but across the board, principal reduction to reflect the true value of the homes and gave people loans based upon that, our economic situation in America would be solved overnight.
Let me ask you a question, Tanya. I know that people did not realize the honest working, hardworking people who fell behind on their mortgage. Some of them might have felt that they were deadbeats or felt like, oh, maybe I bit off more than I could chew. But the realization to this whole thing, from what I understand, is that since they sold these mortgages in bulk, they did not have the deed in hand, nor did they have permission of the owner to foreclose on these homes. Now, can you explain to the listening audience exactly what these bulk homes did to our society and why it's illegal to foreclose on a tenant? And what exactly are they missing in that bulk that would make it illegal for them to foreclose on a victim's home?
Now, the simple way to explain this is that when you enter into a contract with the bank to purchase a home, you have your deed that outlines everything about your home and all the rules and regulations, and you have the note, which is what you sign for, and that's money, okay? And that's what the banks take and monetize and securitize and get paid immediately, the full amount. Like I said, they got $484,000 on my signature, you know, 6 months after I signed on the dotted line. Those two have got to be together to be a valid, legal, binding, and I'll say it again, binding document. When the bank takes that note and securitizes it on Wall Street, your deed of trust becomes a nullity. It's called bifurcation. You have divided, you have split the note from the deed of trust, so that deed of trust is no longer valid. That is why these foreclosures are illegal, because the only person that has the right to foreclose upon a person is the holder of the note. So Wells Fargo does not hold my note. My note is in a Fidelity biotech fund in Boston, Massachusetts, owned by a hedge fund manager. His last name is Raviv. I have his phone number. I have his address. And when I told, when they foreclosed on my house before I broke back in my house and repossessed it and occupied it and made them come to the table, when my friend, because they sold my house back to themselves for $27,000, so my friend, a realtor, he called that fund manager and said, I understand in your pool of mortgage-backed securities that you have a security at a 2027 Woolley Street address. I'm interested in purchasing it. And this hedge fund manager says, I can't sell it to you because I've been told by Wells Fargo that they're in litigation with the owner of the property, so it's not for sale. So Wells Fargo was acknowledging they didn't own the note. They sent the message to the person they sold it to not to sell it back to me. And that's illegal. So the whole thing is that who is the holder in due course? If someone is taking the banks to court, that is the number one question. Show me the note. And I don't mean show me a copy of my signature. I want to see the wet ink signature that I signed. Because if you securitize it, you don't have a right to foreclose.
So in essence, the wet ink signature is what our listening audience need to be looking for when they're gathering their documents. Talk a little bit, Tanya, about what type of documents do you need to be pulling out of your call and you need to be addressing? Give a hypothetical situation if someone was to bring a litigation and wanted to bring this to bear and take their mortgage company to court. What are the documents that they would need to gather and address in their litigation?
Well, the first thing, and you don't even have to be in litigation. If you're looking for a modification, you want to put the bank on notice that you're hip to their game, because if you don't, even in a modification situation, they will take advantage of you. So the first thing, whether you're going to litigate or you're going to modify, you need to present them with what's called a presentment letter. And all a presentment letter is all the facts of your loan and what you know about your loan. And then you say, I want these following items. I want to see the wet ink signature to show who the true holder in due course of my loan is, who really owns my note. And then you have a list of things. If they can't present those, then you're coming from a position of power. The second thing, if you're going to litigate, you need what's called a forensic audit. And what a forensic audit shows you the history of your loan. Like when they went and did my forensic audit, they showed there were breaks in the chain of title. And what that means is this. My initial loan was with World Savings Bank. World Savings Bank was acquired by Wachovia. Wachovia was acquired by Wells Fargo. Now, your note is just like a check. Let's say that, Sherelle, you get a paycheck of $1,000 and you don't cash it, you're going to endorse it over to me. So you flip it over, you sign your name on it, and you give it to me. I can, with on your signature, because you've endorsed that, I can take it and deposit it in my account because you've given me permission by your endorsement. Breaks in the chain of title is the sloppiness of our banks because they never thought that all this would come to the light of day. They never thought that they would be investigated. It was the Wild Wild West. They were unregulated. So they just traded paper. They just traded paper across the internet, you know, electronically. Nobody signed nothing. So there are breaks in the chain of title because World Savings Bank did not get an endorsement, did not endorse the note that they gave to Wachovia, and Wachovia did not endorse the note that they gave to Wells Fargo. So Wells Fargo can't legally say they own that note because there are, quote unquote, breaks in the chain of title. So these are the things that your forensic audit would come up with. You would also come up with robo-signed situations. For example, when I got my substitution of notice of default, they sent me a substitution of trustee. And the vice president of Wells Fargo signed that document on January 23rd. It wasn't notarized till February 28th, I think it was 28 days. Now, everybody knows when you go before a notary, the first thing that it says on the notary is that personally appeared before me this person to sign this document. So how can the vice president sign something and 28 days later the notary notarizes? Obviously, the vice president weren't there. So what happened was that notary was given a whole bunch of documents from the bank on a particular day, and he just signed them. He didn't know if Mickey Mouse had signed that document because the person was not there. That's fraud. That is total out fraud. And that is a fraudulent document, and fraud nullifies any contract. So
now,
let me ask fraudulent document.
If you're in a court of law, and you're able, if your representative, your legal representative is able to prove any of these accusations that you're referencing to, the robo-signing, which would make the contract become null and void and would also show that there is misconduct. Now, in the event that the plaintiff is given the opportunity to be made whole, and at any given point, can the lawyer push for damages to the plaintiff, punitive damages, legal damages, physical damages, mental damages, and can also ask for that deed to be free and clear and that person walk away being made whole with compensation and their home back and the deed to their home free and clear.
Now, you didn't ask for it, but
Now,
what you're talking about, Sherelle, is justice. And as we all know that America's justice system is not just. It really depends on the area of the country. It also depends on the judge that you're standing before. I mean, Florida is just getting wiped out as far as their judges. They are so in the bank's pockets that you could come up with all of that and they'll find some way on a technicality to rule in the bank's favor. I'm personally litigating Wells Fargo, and I live in Northern California. I live in Oakland near San Francisco. But I had my case filed in Los Angeles because Northern California judges are so in bed with the courts. They just totally ignore. I've told the judge to his face, I said, you know, this can't be a bona fide sale because it was fraudulently conveyed. And he'll just talk over me like I didn't even say it. So like I know in Sacramento, our state capital, in Los Angeles, the judges are more fair and, you know, towards the homeowner. So to answer your question, you can have all the proof in the world. It really depends on the judges. And you got to understand that the judges are like a click away from
about,
the bank.
What about case law, Tanya? Has there been any case law on the books to show which cases have prevailed? And which
Ibanez versus Massachusetts. Yeah, Ibanez in the state of Massachusetts, Wells Fargo versus Ibanez. They did not have what I said earlier. They did not have the note, and they could not foreclose. Two people won under that. And there's a lot of case law. And if, you know, for example, what you can do is you can Google cases against Wells Fargo, cases against J.P. Morgan Chase. And there's websites that just list all the lawsuits that are against the banks. And most of them are pending because you have to understand the banks have the deepest pockets in America. They run the country. They run our politicians and they run our courts. So, like, yes, I've got a case in L.A. Will it be heard? Yes. Will it be heard soon? No. Because they're going to paper us and set aside and demur for 3 or 4 or 5 years until they hope I run out of money. And that's what they have on their side. They have time and money, where a few foreclosure victims have either, you know. And that's when you go in and you try to represent yourself, and then you really get kicked to the curb because these people that have gone to law school for 8 years and these judges that have done their stint for 10 years to be where they are look at you and say, how dare you come in to my court and think you're going to play my game, and you have not paid your dues. Let me say this, Tanya.
With those support groups and organizations that are forming, these individuals are not standing alone. They're coming to grips with the fact that they are bringing the heat and they're bringing numbers. So alliances and numbers is the key. And when we come together and join support groups, it really helps us when we have our time of need or when our families need someone now. So I would say to the listening audience, because time is upon us, and we're going to have Mrs. Tanya back again on tomorrow and on Saturday, so you'll be able to call in and go in the chat room and post your questions. But for the benefit of time, I'd say call in and stay with us on this for the next 3 days because we're going somewhere with this. Either you're going to look at joining an alignment with a support group or forming your own, but you cannot lay down and die on this one. The All-American Dream is based on this, people. Listen to me, listening audience. If your home is being foreclosed on or someone's trying to take your home, you fight with all the might you got in you. And sometimes it don't take just getting up and saying, I'm going to do this alone. It takes aligning yourself with organizations like Tanya mentioned. And she's going to mention those organizations again. And so you can go on the website and you can take your dollars and cents and sign up with them so you can have some support. Don't be out here alone by yourself. You know, I'm saying this because each one of us have our own personal story. I know I have my own personal story. I'm a fighter. I go the distance. I will go and challenge anyone who I think is trying to take my livelihood away or take away the all-American dream. Now, if you truly are African-American and you're American, this is the time to prove your Americanism. When people are coming in this country who are aliens, who are immigrants and getting more rights than you have, and then they keep saying, but you're an American. If you're an American, then you want a piece of the all-American dream. You want home ownership, and you want to be able to be treated fairly. You don't want robo-stamps. You don't want predatory lenders, and you certainly don't want people bamboozling you out of your property. So if you have any unction in you, pro se, I've been telling you about pro se, and what Tanya's talking to you about is pro se, because that's what she had to do all the way. But we've assembled lawyers together that owe me favors and that will step forward and offer pro bono, and that will assist us and help us in typing and formalizing injunctions and motions and interrogatories. These are things that we have to type up for them, and I type many of those things for lawyers. And now you have lawyers out there that you can ask to join the team. You're not alone in this thing. And, Tanya, you are our hero. and the things you've done to help other people and yourself and your mother, I applaud you, and I welcome you back to speak to us again on this topic. And ladies and gentlemen, our phone lines are not open right now at this time. We're going to have Mrs. Tanya Dennis come back again tomorrow at 3:30, and I'm going to let her have the last words on this topic, but I implore you to stay with us these next 3 days because there's going to be something that you can use to vindicate yourself. Ms. Tanya Dennis, do you have any suggestion you can give us before we get out of here?
Well, the most important thing, as you say, is to fight, because most people, once they go into foreclosure, they walk away. And one thing the banks do is they like that low-hanging fruit. It's very easy to pluck, and there's no issue. But when a person fights, you get their attention. And I will discuss some community-based organizations that will help you do that. We do it through direct action by going into the banks and doing sit-downs and getting arrested and letter-writing campaigns and making appointments with vice presidents of the banks. And what they want to do is you're creating all these problems. So they say, hey, let's give these people what they want and get them out of the way so we can get this other low-hanging fruit, these other people that aren't resisting. So the number one thing is you've got to fight, whether it's through, you know, social, you know, heat, street heat is what we call it, or litigation in the courts. Because the banks don't like bad media, bad press. And, you know, all you have to do is say, I'm not going to leave my home and put out a press release. And that's what happened to me. And I'm in my house today because of me standing up to the banks after they had sold my house back to themselves.
Did you hear that, ladies and gentlemen? Mrs. Dennis talks about she had been foreclosed on and got her house back. Now, that is some story to tell. A lot of us have already received settlements from individual or independent bank reviews, and they think they've been paid off and their homes are gone. You don't need to stop there. You can still find out if the REO owns that home and if you can get it back. I know women that are in court right now and REO owns their home, and no one really knows who owns the home, and they don't know whether to pay their taxes or their insurance because the bank is holding the home and hoping to sell it for pennies on a dollar. At least the mortgage company is hoping to sell it for pennies on the dollar. It's very vital that you find out who these organizations are and get involved. And if your mother, your sister, your brother is going through a foreclosure, don't let them give up without fighting in a litigation to fill out the necessary paperwork under pro se or find a low-paying lawyer that will assist you. This is some serious, serious business that we have to stick with. And this is not going to go away because it is becoming the newest thing in all urban cities. You can find this very thing happening all over the continent. And ladies and gentlemen, on that note, we're all out of time, but we're not out of time to support you and to get behind you. So please call in tomorrow and definitely be a part of our discussion. We'll be back here again 3:30 tomorrow, and we'll see you then. And we want to wish all of you success in gaining your homes back. We'd like to thank Mrs. Tanya Dennis and ask her to please show up and come tomorrow and support us once again. Thank you so much, Tanya.
Mother is a message. God, take it, the message to our brothers and sisters.
Upon a time, we had a